I can't tell you how many times people call me after they have watched the sexual harassment training that's mandated in New York, that they say, wow, I was watching this training and I realized like my boss is doing all of these things that I'm hearing about, but I didn't think that it was sexual harassment.
Welcome back to Evolving Your Workplace, where we discuss real-time workplace issues with experts to get you the best solutions for your company. I'm your host, Carol Schultz, organizational strategist and creator of the Organizational Scaffold System. Let's get into it. Today, we're getting into a taboo topic in the business world, sexual harassment, power dynamics, and most importantly, what you as a leader can do to make your workplace a truly safe space. To get some insight, I have attorney Brittany Stevens with us. She's a partner at Phillips & Associates Attorneys at Law, which assists victims of workplace harassment and discrimination. Brittany, thanks for being with me today. And I'd like to start here. Tell our audience a little bit about what you do at the firm.
Sure. So thank you for having me today. We are an employee side discrimination law firm. So what we do is we assist employees who have been sexually harassed or discriminated against at their workplace based on a protected class. So based on their age, their national origin, mm-hmm. their race, their pregnancy, disability, national origin. And often we come into the picture when people are complaining of a hostile work environment. So people are getting discriminated against because of that protected class, mm-hmm. or they are terminated because of that protected class, or they are retaliated against after they make a complaint of discrimination. So that's really what we do. We assist people after they've been sexually harassed or terminated and mm-hmm. need some guidance.
Got it. So the firm was founded by William Phillips in 2011. Can you tell us a little bit about what inspired Bill to start the firm?
Sure. So, you know, he had a career before this. So, you know, he was, you know, in the finance world and, you know, he wanted to kind of pivot, change what he was doing. And he started working for another attorney who was handling employment discrimination. And he saw firsthand, you know, how many people just really needed help. These are people calling after they've suffered like the most horrific things at work. And, you know, being able to offer a place where people can complain to and listen was just very powerful. And that's why I even, you know, I'm in this field too, right? Like to be able to be that person's like first phone call mm-hmm. after they have gone through, you know, a very difficult time at their place of employment mm-hmm. is like very rewarding.
Yeah, I get that. So let's dive in a little bit into harassment in the workplace, something that's little talked about publicly, yet happening to about 1 in 4 US workers. How do you define harassment?
So, you know, how the law defines harassment mm-hmm. is often very difficult than like what, you know, lay people may think yeah. of harassment. And, you know, the definition changes based on where you practice, right? Mm-hmm. The federal laws define harassment and discrimination differently than the state laws and the city laws. But if we're talking about like sexual harassment, mm-hmm. You know, we're really talking about like unwanted sexual conduct that, yeah. you know, makes someone uncomfortable, that is both like subjectively, you know, makes them uncomfortable and then objectively could be deemed as, you know, something that can be deemed sexual harassment under the law, right? Because some people can be offended by something, but objectively, it may not rise to that level. So, you know, that's why these cases, discrimination cases, are so fact dependent, right? Because we really have to analyze every fact pattern, every person that calls mm-hmm. us, because, you know, some people may think they have a claim and, you know, it may not rise to that level under the mm-hmm. law. And then a lot of times people call us saying, I don't know if I have something, and we listen and we are of the mindset, oh, wow, of course you have something, right? Like this is a very egregious claim.
Mm-hmm. So because of what I'm hearing about you then, it's leading me to believe that harassment's not always sexual harassment.
Right. Well, so there's discrimination, right? You can go through a hostile work environment mm-hmm. based on like, let's say your race or your, you know, your national origin. And people kind of use the term harassment, right? If they're getting harassed at work because of their race, right? We use the term you're going through like a hostile work environment. But again, the facts really matter. It depends, like, you know, what's actually happening? What is the conduct? We really need to look at everything case by case to determine if there is like a legal claim there.
Do you ever send people back and say, you know, get this on film or on audio or, you know, start taking better notes?
Yes and no. I mean, when people call us, you know, one of the first questions we ask is, well, what, do you have any evidence, right? Mm-hmm. Especially with discrimination, it's not always out in the open. People are not always that stupid to sexually harass people in front of, you know, other coworkers.
Right.
A lot of things are, you know, he said, she said, or she said, she said, mm-hmm. he said. Sometimes we do tell people, look, at this early stage, we may not be able to assist now, but, you know, maybe call us back if X, Y, or Z happens, right? But yes, certainly having documented evidence or a complaint to human resources, I mean, that really makes the case a lot stronger.
Mm-hmm. How does the power dynamic at work affect this issue?
It's a very real issue, right? I mean, a lot of times employers, you know, they affect the ability to hire, to fire, to mm-hmm. promote, to discipline their employees, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, the imbalance specifically as it relates to like a supervisor and a subordinate, the subordinate may not always feel like they have the means or the capabilities to say no or feel comfortable enough to mm-hmm. complain about the behavior. And people are very nervous to, you know, to stand up against, you know, their boss. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's a very real issue. They're afraid of losing hours, losing pay, losing their job. And it's not always as easy as just saying no, right? We see that all the time. A lot of people sometimes feel like they need to, you know, go along with conduct because they are getting threatened about their job. Employers and supervisors hold a lot of power over employees, and that automatically creates this imbalance.
Mm-hmm. So what does then, you know, a victim of sexual harassment do in a situation where they fear repercussions?
Yeah.
They just go hide, you know, they can't just go hide under the covers.
Right.
I mean, they could, but...
Feeling empowered to speak up mm-hmm. is, it's, you know, we want to be able to help people feel that empowerment, mm-hmm. right? And like, you know, what companies could do is they can offer human resources departments where people don't fear retaliation, right? I mean, people are scared that they go complain. Now they have a target on their back. Yep. They're seen as the person that is the troublemaker. Mm-hmm. They are not believed. I mean, there's so many things that people fear. So really having companies try to ensure to their employees that, like, look, we will do everything we can to protect you if you do decide mm-hmm. to come forward is, you know, is a very important thing. And even having like policies and procedures in place, I can't tell you how many times I get a phone call and, you know, my client doesn't even know where to complain to, right? I ask them, I say, well, did you complain internally? And they say, well, I don't even know who I can complain to because there was never even a policy to begin with. Or what we see is, you know, I represent a lot of like, you know, people who are maybe getting sexually harassed by the boss or the CEO. So for them, who could they complain to, right? Like they're getting sexually harassed by, you know, the C-suite executive or the, you know, the owner of the company.
Yeah, you know, that's so disturbing for me to hear. And I'm sure anybody else who's listening to this, right? You know, some of the work that I do with my clients is building a culture of feedback, right? But that culture of feedback, where you can say anything to anybody at any level without fear of being thrown under the bus or some other negative repercussion, has to be driven by the CEO, right? So to your point, what if it's happening from the CEO? And you know, I think sometimes all we can do is to educate people to ask better questions in interviews, right? You know, of course, that none of that is going to take the place of a situation where somebody needs a job, right? And they may just think, well, this is the only job I can get right now. But I firmly believe if, you know, asking better questions, you know, talking about your culture, you know, is feedback encouraged? Is it discouraged? You know, where is it? Because in a true culture of feedback, it works. And then you don't have to worry about going to whomever the power that be are.
Right.
Go on.
And I was, you know, it's something as easy as maybe Googling the employer, right? Like a lot, some of this stuff is public record.
Yeah.
You can see, you know, if there's been litigation against the mm-hmm. place that you're going to work for. Now, I mean, a lot of matters do settle, so you're not going to mm-hmm. be able to find out a lot right. of, you know, everything. But, you know, if you Google the company and you see, you know, 10 different lawsuits from pregnant women, maybe yeah. that's a red flag that says I'm not going to go work there.
Has the removal of DEI at the federal level affected your work at all?
I mean, we haven't seen anything okay. like an enormous change just yet. I mean, things take time. Mm-hmm. You know, things kind of move slowly. But I mean, yes, we're expecting things to change as the months go on, and that's to be expected.
Are there certain types of companies that, you know, when you hear from somebody, it's this type of a company or that type of a company, or is it literally all over the map?
Yeah, I like to say that like discrimination does not discriminate because mm-hmm. it really happens everywhere.
Yeah.
It happens, you know, at large corporations, it happens at hospitals, it happens at the small mom and shop stores. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes what we do see is depending where the company is or like the field, we get certain like legal defenses that, oh, well, this is just the kind of talk that they talk about at a car dealership, right? Or, you know, your client works in the field right. and, you know, she has to be around all these men and she expected, you know, to have these misogynistic comments made about her, right? I mean, sometimes we see that, but mm-hmm. no, I mean, at every level, at every tax bracket, at really, you know, discrimination can happen at any place.
That's really unfortunate. So what tips do you have for leaders that are listening to this to set up their companies to be safe spaces that will not tolerate this?
Right. So, I mean, there's a lot of things places can do. I think kind of talking about what I mentioned before is like setting up policies and procedures okay. so that people are first even aware as to what to do if they're getting discriminated mm-hmm. against, right? Mm-hmm. Make sure that there's proper training. You know, I can't tell you how many times people call me after they have watched the sexual harassment training that's mandated in New York that they say, wow, I was watching this training and I realized like my boss is doing all of these things that I'm hearing about, but I didn't think that it was sexual harassment.
Like what, for example?
Like, you know, asking me out on dates constantly when I keep saying no, you know, telling sure. me that, you know, coming up to me and touching my shoulders, you know, maybe, you know, texting me at late hours. Like, you know, and again, we look mm-hmm. at like the totality of things too. Mm-hmm. But, you know, not everyone knows, you know, not everything is so overt too, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, someone getting sexually assaulted, right? Yes, that's an obvious case of sexual harassment. But sometimes there's, you know, more subtle things, right? Sometimes we have people that are getting like groomed and things are, you know, slowly happening. But going back to your question, I mean, these policies and procedures and training your managers, mm-hmm. training your leaders, not only to not sexually harass or discriminate, but what to do if someone comes to you and complains about
right.
it. So, you know, the training is very significant mm-hmm. and having a department that can really offer the support to its employees, right? So we talked about the human resources office or whoever's in charge of managing complaints, but really being a place where they take these cases seriously and, you know, maybe says, look, we're going to hear what you have to say and then we're going to investigate. We're going to mm-hmm. conduct a thorough investigation because maybe it's not just happening to you, but maybe this is happening to multiple people and, you know, really trying to offer support to the people that are coming forward so that people are not afraid to come forward because that really is such a significant problem. Why so many women, so many men don't complain while they're still employed.
Brittany, what would you say is the percentage of women versus men that this happens to?
You know, I don't know if I can confidently give a percentage, but what can I can say based on, like, you know, the cases, the people that I speak to and the calls we get, you know, I'd say if we're talking about just like sexual harassment, right, it's probably, you know, our matters tend to be probably like an 80-20 split with women and men, you know, and I don't know, that's just where I am in New York City. And, you know, as far as discrimination, I mean, that's like a 50-50, right? Because it happens of all ages, all disabilities, you know, retaliation is equal gender. So, you know, that's probably a split down the middle.
You know, I have a friend who, and I, of course, am out in Colorado, a friend whose sister has a number of, I mean, really serious health issues. And, you know, she knows that they got rid of her because she was using just too much time for vacation, but they put her into a much larger RIF. And I said to her, well, this is what companies do to protect themselves, right? You can't now go to say them, well, you know, I called out too many days sick with my issue, so they're firing me for having a medical issue. I mean, is that just literally impossible to ever litigate situations
well,
like that?
It's not impossible. We do handle a lot of those cases. I mean, it's very smart for the employer to do that, right? They want to let go of the person that's on leave, right?
Because that they're having to pay.
And so often what they do is they terminate them and they hide it behind a reduction in force or a restructuring. You know, we're merging positions. And yes, those cases are difficult, right? Because, you know, most people are at will employees. So for the most part, you know, employers are allowed to terminate its employees for any reason at all. However, if we're able to say, well, no, the real reason you're terminating them or choosing them specifically in the reduction is not because of a random, you know, draw, but is because this person took time off, then maybe you have a case. But yeah, those cases are always going to be difficult. A lot of times what we do with those is, you know, people usually get severance packages. So, you know, we help, you know, get a larger package for those clients because litigation might just be very difficult.
Yeah. So you joined the firm in 2015, so about 10 and a half years ago now. In the time that you have been there, how have you seen your own workplace, right, at Phillips & Associates evolve?
Yeah, so I started here when, like, the firm was relatively small.
Right.
You know, there was about, like, I think, like, six attorneys here. You know, we were in a small office space. And I feel grateful that I started at like the early years of the firm because I definitely have seen the evolution of what we are today. You know, we have over 50 employees. There's now, before it was just one partner and everyone else was an associate. Now we have eight partners. We have, you know, multiple paralegals and legal administrators. So, you know, we've grown. We now practice not only in New York, but we practice in Florida, New Jersey, Pennsylvania. We take on more cases. A big growing practice area for us is whistleblowers, people who like complain of any kind of unlawful activity and then get terminated for that. We've grown and it's really been like fun to kind of be in it while we've done that.
Yeah, that's fantastic. What would you say is the biggest bottleneck to growing the firm right now?
You know, I'd say New York has very good law, right? Like you kind of want to be practicing in New York and specifically in New York City because that's where like the law is most favorable. But like the unfortunate thing is once you start getting out of New York City, you know, even in like New York State or even like in Florida where we practice, you know, it's a lot more difficult. The law is not as employee friendly. And, you know, when you're relying on federal law as opposed to like favorable state and city law, you do not really want to be in front of those judges and you don't really want to be litigating in those jurisdictions because they will be much more favorable to the employer. So, you know, it really does depend where you're working, unfortunately, right? As to like what maybe the trajectory of your case may go.
Well, so, you know, so let's pick Florida because that's where you're, you know, you're growing an office there. What are the thoughts, you know, or however, whether it's, you know, Bill that decided, yeah, I'd like to move into Florida, or however that happened, knowing that they're not as employee friendly.
Right.
Why do you still make the decision to do that?
Yeah. I mean, I don't practice in Florida. I'm not right. I'm Florida. I'm not licensed there. You know, I think just being able to expand our reach is, you know, an important goal mm-hmm. of the firm. Mm-hmm. You know, New Yorkers and Floridians are like kind of go hand in hand. A lot of people like, you know, go True. Back and forth.
True.
Including Bill, who's the managing partner here. Mm-hmm. He has, you know, his residence in both places. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's a matter of like, you know, establishing a presence in other states, really expanding our reputation like nationally. But, you know, as far as the law, yeah, I mean, it's not as favorable, but there's still a lot of claims and people are still getting discriminated against there. And people need representation.
Right, right. Well, obviously, right. So if you had and you may or may not be able to identify this, I normally interview the CEO. So since you as a partner, although not the named partner, so may or may not be able to answer some of these questions. But if you had to identify one thing, if solved, would make the biggest impact in the business growth, what do you think that might be?
You know, I think something that all law firms try and work at is just making sure that, you know, we have, you know, when we speak to someone on the phone who's calling us for the very first time, that we're able to really connect with that client mm-hmm. and like start helping them quickly retain them as our clients and really, you know, start that process as quickly and efficiently as possible. Mm-hmm. People want to connect with their lawyers, right? And people right. may call multiple law firms for a consultation. So being that person that, you know, gets the client to feel safe with you, mm-hmm. you know, is an important skill that we have. But, you know, it's also important to, you know, to get the business and to keep the clients happy.
Yeah. And do you do trainings internally within your own company to teach people how to be great listeners? Because, you know, we're taught a lot of things in school. What we're not taught is how to listen, how to be present, how to be empathetic. And we're living in a pretty divisive world these days.
Yeah. So we do trainings on that. When someone comes and works here within the first few weeks, they train within our intake department where mm-hmm. they're just listening to people call. Mm. So they have a very good idea as to how to handle someone when they are calling, right? Mm-hmm. Because, again, these people are very emotional. You know, they need sometimes a lot of hand-holding, a lot of assurance that you're going to mm-hmm. be the one who's going to be able to help them. And, you know, you have to be empathetic. You know, this job is not for everyone. You really mm-hmm. need to be able to
not blame the victim.
You can't play the victim. You have yeah. to be able to empathize. Mm-hmm. But you also have to think, okay, you know, put the emotions aside. How can I best serve this person? Right? Like I can feel very badly for them, but I already know that, you know, them litigating this case would be detrimental to them, detrimental to their health. So, you know, kind of wearing multiple hats is very important to be successful mm-hmm. here.
You know, and when you and I first talked, I know I shared some things. I've not shared this publicly ever, you know, of my own sexual harassment throughout the years. Right. You know, and just thinking, you know, just put on your big girl panties and suck it up, right? And, you know, I think knowing what I know now, I would have handled things considerably differently, right? And I have to think that part of it is just, you know, educating people. And to your point about, I know this is going to be detrimental to someone's health, right? Is to be able to really get inside of listening to what they're saying to determine like what's the reason they may or may not survive this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly right. And like everyone, you know, everyone's different, right? And that's mm-hmm. why I always ask my client, like, what is it that you want from this? Is this something that you are looking to maybe, you know, leave your place of employment and maybe we can do things quietly? I can contact the employer. Yeah. I can try and negotiate some kind of like, you know, departure for you mm-hmm. where you get paid for things,
right.
Or is this something that you're really looking to litigate? Right. And like everyone has their own opinion as to what they want. And then mm-hmm. it's also up to me to tell them, you know, based on what I see, what maybe makes sense given, you know, your evidence and your facts as to like what mm-hmm. course of action might be best for you.
How do people find your firm, Brittany? Are you doing outbound marketing, you know, inbound? What's it look like?
Yep. So you can, I mean, if you Google Phillips and Associates, you'll find us. You know, we, you can search for me directly, Brittany Stevens at Phillips and Associates. You can see me on LinkedIn, Brittany Stevens Alper. But you know, we spend a lot of money to market ourselves on Google. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you put in one of the best sexual harassment discrimination law firms in New York, and Phillips and Associates should pop
comes
right
on up at the top. Yep. That's fantastic. Yeah. I love that. And you are all contingent, correct? All the work you do is contingency.
Yes. We're a contingency firm. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of our clients cannot pay, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars for a lawyer. That's usually one of the first questions people call when, you know, people ask when they call us. So we understand that, and we're contingency.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there, you know, is there a place for a retained law firm in this industry? I'm curious. Or is it really just, you know, there's just not enough business that would happen like that?
I mean, it depends. I mean, sometimes people call us and they just want, like, you know, something reviewed, and we have, like, you know, we charge by the hour.
Right.
But, you know, for like a discrimination matter, that's like especially things that go to court or where we do a significant amount of work. I mean, again, the hourly cost is substantial. So, you know, the contingency model is really helpful to most people who do not have the financial means to pay a lawyer, you know, X amount of money up front for, you know, a couple of hours of work. Here, we can spend as many hours as possible, right? And we're in it together. We only take anything if we're able to get you anything.
Well, right. So you know, you're obviously hedging your bets on, you know, what's going to bring you the revenue that you need, right? Because to the point, everybody's working for free until you get, till you close a deal, so to speak, when, you know, win a lawsuit. What have I not asked you? Is there anything I've missed asking you? Is there anything that you think is important within this field to talk about that I haven't asked you?
No, I mean, I think, like, you know, some big takeaways are really that if you feel like something is wrong, right, and it's in your gut, then maybe something is wrong at work. And, you know, feeling like you have someone to, you know, calling a law firm, kind of just getting a sense as to, you know, is what I'm going through unlawful, should be something that hopefully people feel comfortable doing, right? These are confidential communications, but, you know, just making sure that they are protecting themselves at their place of employment, because at the end of the day, you know, the company is going to do everything to protect themselves. So making sure that you're protecting, you know, yourself as the employee is very important to do.
Great. Well, I appreciate this conversation. This is, you know, such, I mean, this is just really such importance. And I so often worry for those who live in states, as you've talked about, that are not particularly worker friendly, right?
Right.
So Brittany Stevens, partner with Phillips and Associates, thanks so much for joining me. I really enjoyed our time together.
Thank you. Thank you, Carol. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to Evolving Your Workplace. Is there a topic you want to discuss? Let us know what you think in a review. And don't forget to click follow to stay up to date on upcoming episodes. Thanks again for listening, and see you next time.